Welcome to the Fourth Innings Podcast. I am your host, Stuart Love, and you're joined by Jamie Hawkins, Stuart Tomlin, and Charlie Concher. Hi and welcome to the Fourth and Inches podcast. I am your host Stuart Love. I will be solo today, but as we enter, well, very soon into playoff football, I will be joined by Stuart Tomlin, Jamie Hawkins and Charlie Concher, and the whole team will be together going through the playoffs into the Super Bowl, and then we'll start obviously with the off-season into training camp, mini-camp, the draft obviously, and then into the next again season where I will be sober as a bone, healthy, fit, and looking forward to going to some NFL games next year. Hopefully, as I enter my end of my rehab programme, sort of end of December, sort of early January, I might go with the USA for a game. It's very unlikely I'm going to get to see the Steelers, but I will go and see a game, because obviously I've not been in any of the London games or Germany games this year. So, yeah, that was a bit disheartening. But I'm just glad to see everybody had a really good time. So, we'll just quickly dive in. It's been a busy week for me with rehab and A&A, and obviously planning Christmas shopping and trying to get everything in, because I'm in a rehabilitation facility 8 till 4 and I get to come home at night. I'm very limited in the time that I have on my cell phone or my podcasting equipment. So it's all a bit of a mishmash, just trying to make sure that my children, my wife and both sets of family have everything for Christmas, which I'm actually really looking forward to this year. It'll be the first time I've been sober since a 15, 14 year old, maybe younger. I think I was having drinks when I was like 11, 12, you know, just small drinks, nothing extreme with uncles and whatever, but definitely 15, 16 having drinks at a Christmas table and then drinking recreationally, and it just, as you can listen to my podcast, it just spiraled into absolute chaos from last October, past October, and then May this year, when I got back from Charlotte in North Carolina, I just went into total meltdown and almost died, basically. Never ate for over a week, lost 3 stone in 10 days, and ended up with multiple things. You can, as I say, listen to the podcast. I've got alcoholic neuropathy, which basically I can't feel my shins or my feet at the moment, but that will come back in time. I'm gaining weight and I'm feeling a lot better. Not having alcohol in my system, a lot fresher, a lot sharper, a lot more productive. So obviously sorry that for any regular listeners that do listen to the podcast, it is a bit late, but just got a lot on, but I'm trying my best to put some content out and obviously at the same time watch NFL and keep myself productive, active, keep my brain going, play some guitar. Got a dog now, so yeah, things are looking good and feeling good. So we've got the NFL game recaps week 11. 2022, we've had 3 games already this week, but I'll go into the recap from last week and then I'll give my predictions for this week's games, which will be today, Sunday, but I'll go over the games that have just been played. So we had the Titans 27, Packers 17. I mean, the Packers had a big victory over the Cowboys this past Sunday, which gave them hope entering the game. I mean, they were installed as 3-point favourites over the Titans, as it seemed as though people believed that their issues obviously had been solved. As it turns out, that was far from the case. It looked like the Packers would be able to match the Titans on the scoreboard early when Aaron Rodgers caught Tennessee offside at the end of the first quarter and found Christian Watson for a touchdown. This was Watson's 4th touchdown in 2 weeks, and it would have tied the game at 7 had Mason Crosby's extra point not been blocked. Still, the Packers did look good, especially after Derrick Henry was stuffed on a 4th-and-1 inside the 5-yard line, running an 18-play drive in the second quarter. The Packers, however, had issues generating consistent offence outside of one of the aforementable drive. As they accumulated only 96 net yards in the opening half, the Titans, conversely, were able to move the chains effectively the entire evening. Aside from one throw, Ryan Tannehill was brilliant. I mean, he really was. And he was aided by the usual fierce running from Henry. Tannehill had the play to ice the game when he delivered a miraculous throw to Austin Hooper for a touchdown to put Tennessee up by 10. Rodgers needed to respond but failed. He overthrew Alan Lazard on a 3rd-and-3 with 5 minutes 30 remaining, and he turned the ball over on downs the next play. As mentioned, Tannehill made one blunder. This was an interception in which he didn't see the defensive back. Otherwise, Tannehill was absolutely brilliant. He did a tremendous job of converting third downs and improbable throws. The Packers had no answer for him at all, as he was 22 of 27 for 333 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception. And I'd like to thank Pro Football Focus for those stats. By contrast, Rodgers went 24 of 39 for 227 yards and 2 touchdowns. Rodgers didn't commit a turnover, though he was nearly flagged for a safety when he was guilty of intentionally grounding one foot inside his own end zone. Rodgers didn't appear to be on the same page with his receivers at the time, particularly with Lazard. Speaking of Lazard, actually, he was second on the Packers with 5 catches for 57 yards, trailing on Randall Cobb, 6 for 73. Lazard dropped passes and didn't seem to have a grasp of where to run at times. Rodgers, I mean, had to be frustrated with Lazard, really frustrated, especially after seeing Watson score twice as he caught 4 balls for 48 yards otherwise. The Packers didn't get much out of their running game at all. Aaron Jones was limited to 40 yards on 12 carries, while A.J. Dillon, 6-13, was barely a factor. Henry was the leading rusher in this contest, though he didn't reach the century mark. Still, he was a big fantasy producer. He rumbled for 87 yards and a touchdown. He also caught 2 passes for 45 receiving yards. He also threw a touchdown pass to Hooper, which was one of Hooper's 2 scores. 2 Titans lodged more receiving yards than Henry. The leader was Treylon Burks, who snatched 7 balls for 111 yards, which was really impressive, and about half of that coming on the final real play from scrimmage, in which Burks caught, I think it was a 51-yard bomb. Yeah, it was a 51-yard bomb. I just got this on the side on the iPad at the moment, just watching the real highlights. Robert Woods hauled it in 6 passes for 69 yards. So we shall move on to the next game, which is the Falcons 27, Bears 24. There was offensive fireworks expected in this game, and the first half definitely did not disappoint. The teams combined for 34 points and a 17-7 tie heading into intermission, as Justin Fields accounted for 2 touchdowns while the Falcons scored on a kickoff return. These could have been even more offensive, as Fields overthrew Daniel Mooney for a score, while Cordell Patterson lost a fumble near midfield. Patterson redeemed himself by scoring on the kickoff return the next time he touched the ball. The second half, however, told a different story. Fields suffered some sort of leg injury when he was crunched in the pocket during the opening snap following intermission, and then hurt his shoulder. As he was holding around during the second half, he rushed for only 12 yards following intermission, despite rushing for 73 yards beforehand. He had the opportunity to run, but was reluctant to do so. Fields also completed only 7 passes in the second half, and he was responsible for an interception that ended the game at the very end. While under pressure, Fields threw a high pass which was tipped and picked. However, Fields had some positive moments as well. He placed a perfect ball down the sideline to David Montgomery, then scrambled around in the pocket for 15 seconds before ending equanimously to St. Brown on a first down. Fields finished 4 of 21 for 153 yards, 1 touchdown and an interception. He also scrambled 18 times for 85 rushing yards and a second score on the ground. There's a good chance Chicago would have prevailed had Fields not suffered an injury which really limited his mobility. The Bears were sparked by Fields running, and yet that wasn't happening amid the injury. Marcus Mariota, meanwhile, has some issues as well. He had a clean stat line. It was, let me just check, 13 of 20 for 131 yards and a touchdown, but he was fortunate not to be intercepted once again as the Chicago player dropped an easy pick. Mariota did some running as well, scrambling 13 times for 25 rushing yards and a score. Aside from Fields, the leading rusher in the game was also Chicago player, as David Montgomery handed most of the workload to Khalil Herbert, injured. Montgomery rushed for 67 yards and a touchdown on 17 carries. He also paced the Bears in receiving with 3 catches for 54 yards. Following Montgomery, Cole Kmet was next on the stat sheet with 3 catches for 35 yards, with one of the receptions being a ridiculous one-arm grab. Mooney caught 4 balls for 29 yards and a touchdown, but as mentioned, he should have scored twice. Unlike the Bears, the Falcons utilised a backfield committee, with Patterson rushing for 52 yards on 10 carries. Tyler Aguilar rumbled for 55 yards on, 8 attempts, though he needed the final real play from scrimmage to get there after bursting forward for 26 yards against a dejected Chicago defence. Only 2 Falcons lost more than 17 yards. Receiving yards, Kyle Pitts was 3-43 and Damir Bird 2-29. Pitts left the game in the third quarter with a knee injury. Drake London caught a 2-yard touchdown, which was his only reception. We'll go for a quick break there and we'll be back for Bills Browns. Hi, and welcome back to the second part of the 4th and Inches podcast, and we have the Bills 31, Browns 23. The Bills dealt with a late flight to Detroit, as well as a flu outbreak during the week that caused them to miss practice. They certainly played as such to begin the game, as Cleveland jumped out to a quick 10-3 lead. Buffalo's injury-ravaged defence had no answer for Amari Cooper, while Stephon Diggs couldn't even draw a single target. Buffalo went 24 minutes without a single first down. Diggs and Sean McDermott really had a heart-to-heart conversation on the sideline at one point, as the number one receiver expressed his absolute frustration. You could just see it. Diggs was eventually happy, as his first target happened to be a 5-yard touchdown. This, as well as a lost fumble on a botched snap, helped the Bills establish a 13-10 advantage just prior to halftime, a lead that they would never relinquish. Buffalo dominated in the second half as Cleveland's defence suddenly looked like the unit was exhausted. Cleveland's offence, meanwhile, failed to generate any points until garbage time drive that helped push the spread for those lucky to bet the +8. The sudden offense struggles occurred because the Browns had 2 scoreless drives end inside the Buffalo's 30. One drive concluded when Jacoby Brissett was stuffed on a 4th down sneak attempt. The second ended on a blocked field goal, which occurred right after Brissett missed an open Harrison Bryant in the end zone as a result of heavy pressure. The Bills took over the second half with a running game, as it was evident that Allen couldn't get anything going because of the pressure of his elbow injury. Allen went for 18 of 27 for 197 yards and a touchdown. He had a long scramble negated by a hold, which is why he accumulated just 7 rushing yards on 3 runs. Thus, Allen is lucky that his rushing attack saved the day. Both Devin Singletary and James Cook had great performances, with each dashing for 86 yards. Cook got there on 7 fewer carries, 18 for 11, but Singletary scored a touchdown. Singletary also had a 13-yard gain negated by a hold. With Allen not passing well, Diggs' numbers were suppressed. I mean, he caught 4 passes for 48 yards. He salvaged his fantasy performance with a touchdown. He was 3rd on the receiving list, trailing Dawson Knox 7 for 70 and Gabe Davis 5 for 68. Davis was guilty of a drop on 3rd down. I mean, the 5-yard rush guys will be loving this. I mean, the best fantasy producer in the game was Amari Cooper, who caught 8 of his 12 targets for 113 yards and 2 touchdowns. Donovan Peoples-Jones reeled in 5 balls for 61 yards and a touchdown. And at the very end of the afternoon, Peoples-Jones had a gain of 20 negated by a hold. And he also drew a 36-yard pass interference flag. As you can probably tell, Brissett had a big fantasy performance. Brissett went 28 of 41 for 324 yards and 3 scores. He nearly threw a 4th touchdown, but the pressure forced an errant heave, as mentioned earlier. He has just 1 more start before Deshaun Watson takes over in week 13. It was surprising to see the Browns fail to run the ball, which put Brissett in many unfavourable down and distance situations. Nick Chubb was severely limited, mustering just 19 yards on 14 carries. Kareem Hunt outgained him on 5 carries for 32 yards. But yep, even as a Steelers fan, it's going to be interesting just to see what Deshaun Watson can produce, because he is a top-tier generational quarterback, and I think he can change the Browns. So, yep, very excited. Happy for Dan Davies and Paul Brown and a few other Browns friends that I've got. But as a Steelers fan, I don't want to give them too much praise. Let's just say that. I'll try and keep it clean. We'll move straight on to Eagles-Colts. Eagles 17, Colts 16. The Eagles sabotaged a potential victory against the Commanders on Monday night with countless mistakes. I mean, serious mistakes. As they did the same thing in the game. They constantly shot themselves in the foot throughout the afternoon, causing them to trail for most of the contest. The trouble started on a first quarter drive that saw the Eagles commit three penalties on the possession, negating 18-yard A.J. Brown reception. Later, with the Eagles down 7-3, they had potential touchdown ruined when a second and goal and a 2-yard line turned into an 8-yard loss because of a botched snap. A bad call from the coaching staff ruined a 3rd-and-2 prior to halftime when they called Kenneth Gainwell up the middle. Gainwell was predictably stuffed. I mean, absolutely stuffed. The second half wasn't kinder to the Eagles, to be honest. At least to start, Jalen Hurts lost a fumble on a strip sack after holding the ball forever in the pocket. A.J. Brown later lost a fumble after Philadelphia's defence obtained a turnover in their favour. The Eagles trailed the entire game as a result, as it seemed like this would be the second consecutive loss for them. Everything changed on the final drive. Something finally went in their favour when Miles Sanders drew a deep interference flag. Hurts then converted a fourth down on a sneak and ran into the end zone a couple of plays later. Matt Ryan had time to engineer a game-winning drive but didn't possess the protection as Philadelphia's pass rush disrupted in the final possession. Hurts had an underwhelming passing stat line, going 18 of 25 for 190 yards and a touchdown. However, he scrambled 16 times for 86 rushing yards and the decisive score. It's remarkable that Hurts was able to enjoy a great fantasy performance despite nothing going Philadelphia's way for much of the afternoon. Devontae Smith's pace, the Eagles with 6 catches for 78 yards followed by Brown and his 5 grabs for 60 yards. Quez Watkins, 2 for 31, caught Hurts only passing touchdown. Sanders, who was the hero at the end with the, it was a drawn penalty, needed to validate his day because he struggled otherwise. Indianapolis excellent run defence limited him to 47 yards on 13 carries. It was no surprise that Jonathan Taylor was the lead in rusher for most of the game through. He was eventually eclipsed by Hurts. What is shocking, though, is that Taylor didn't reach the century mark versus a pathetic Philadelphia run defence. Ndamukong Suh and Livinol Joseph, I'm terrible with his name pronunciations, made an impact as Taylor gained just 84 yards on 22 carries. Though he scored a touchdown, Taylor ruined a potential scoring drive when he lost a fumble at midfield after carrying the pile for what seemed like an eternity. As for Ryan, he went for 23 of 32 for 213 yards. He endured a painful drop in the red zone, but did fine as the game manager until obviously needed to come up with some big plays at the very end. Ryan threw to three players primarily. Michael Pittman led the way with 6 grabs for 75 yards, while Paris Campbell was close with 5 catches for 67 yards. Alex Pierce saw more targets, 8, than any other receivers, but converted only 3 of them for 28 yards. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back with Patriots Jets. Hi, and welcome to part 3 of the 4th and Inches podcast. So we're going to go Patriots against the Jets, Patriots 10, Jets 3. So this was a 3-3 affair, what seemed like an eternity. But there was no question as to which team was superior. The Patriots outgained the Jets 297 for 103, and they averaged 5 yards per play compared to 2.1 for the Jets. New England won the time of possession by 11 minutes. The problem? The Patriots would constantly cross midfield, but would crush themselves with mistakes. For example, there was one sequence in which Mac Jones took a sack to move his team out of field goal range, but Rahom Reggie-Stevenson bailed him out with a 3rd-and-16 conversion that featured several broken tackles. Jones wished to continue to sabotage his team. However, as he took another sack, making the field goal longer, the kick was missed in extremely windy conditions. On another occasion, a sack and a hold forced a longer field goal, which was also missed. Stevenson was stuffed on a later 4th-and-3 as well. This is how the game went for the Patriots, who scored just 3 points in 5 trips to the Jets' territory. The team blew some defensive opportunities as well when several New England defenders dropped potential interceptions, including one that could have been returned for 6. The defence was able to come up big with a late tackle on 3rd-and-1, which forced a punt in the final seconds. The Patriots' offence let them down in this game big time, and the defence couldn't force a turnover. However, their special teams managed the decisive play with Jonathan Jones scoring a punt return, the first punt return touchdown in the NFL this year. The Jets will need to big time take a long, hard look at Zach Wilson to close out the season, because they cannot win if he keeps performing like this. Wilson failed to log double-digit completions, going 9 of 22 for a mere 77 yards. He didn't commit a turnover, but was very lucky that some potential interceptions of him were dropped. Wilson was miserable. He threw well short of a target on early 3rd down. He underthrew Garrett Wilson downfield. He overthrew Braxton Berrios and Denzel Mims on 2 routine short tosses. He was also almost responsible for a defensive touchdown when he lost the ball on a strip sack, but replay review showed his elbow was down prior to the ball being dislodged. Wilson was at least able to lead the team in rushing with 26 yards on 3 scrambles, as both Michael Carter, 8-19, and James Robinson, 17-10, got nothing on the ground. New York's running game has looked lost ever since Breece Hall suffered a season-ending injury. Only one Jet player logged more than 17 receiving yards. That was Denzel Mims, 2-35, who got there mostly with early 34-yard reception that set up Jets' only points of the game. On the flip side, Mims dropped a gain of about 20. Garrett Wilson, 2-12, with a big disappointment, with Zach Wilson's incompetence, that's the word I'm looking for, can be blamed for a lack of production. It was just terrible. Jones was the better quarterback in this game, but only by default. I mean, the stat lines look fine as he went 23 of 27 for 246 yards, but he made some mental mistakes in the pocket during the game, taking 5 sacks. I mean, to be fair, the Patriots lost 2 offensive linemen in injury, as both David Andrews and Isaiah Wynn were ruled out at halftime. Stevenson continued to be the lead back, though he couldn't get anything on the ground. He was limited to 26 yards on 15 carries, while Damian Harris showed more burst. Harris asked for 65 yards on 8 attempts. However, Stevenson was much better as a receiver. He led the team in that regard, catching all 6 of his targets for 56 yards. Aside from Stevenson, Jacoby Myers was the Patriots' leading receiver with 4 grabs for 52 yards, followed by Jonnu Smith, 4 and 40. So we shall move on to Saints and Rams. So Saints 27, Rams 20. I mean, to be honest, the Rams haven't exactly responded well since Jalen Ramsey called out the offense following the loss to the Buccaneers. They've dropped their previous 2 games. And it hasn't been the offence that has been responsible for the defeat. Ramsey's defence couldn't stop Colt McCoy last week, and they had issues containing the Andy Dalton-led Saints offence this Sunday. Ramsey was actually beaten for 2 touchdowns, adding further embarrassment to his comments. Adding injury to insult, Matthew Stafford was lost to his 2nd concussion in many weeks. He suffered a concussion on a 3rd down sack, which forced him out of action in close game. 3rd-string quarterback Bryce Perkins was able to scramble a bit, but looked like a terrible raw passer. I mean, it really showed no awareness in the pocket, taking a bad sack on crucial 3rd down late in regulation. This was huge, a downgrade from Stafford, who went 11 of 18 for 159 yards and 2 touchdowns. Perkins just went 5 of 10 for 64 yards. Ouch. The Saints, meanwhile, had a great game from Dalton, battling a team that's getting 0 pass rush despite Aaron Donald's presence. Dalton completed all but 4 of his passes, going 21 of 25 for 265 yards and 3 touchdowns. This included a 53-yard touchdown bomb to Chris Olave, thanks to Pro Football Focus for those stats. Speaking of Olave, the dynamic receiver caught 5 passes for 102 yards and a touchdown. Juwan Johnson, 3-47, and Jarvis Landry, 3-33, caught Dalton's touchdowns. Surprisingly, Alvin Kamara didn't have a big game. He was limited to 42 yards on 12 carries and caught only 4 passes for 47 receiving yards. It's fair to wonder if his reception count will drop from prior weeks because of Landry is back from injury. The leading rusher in this game was Cam Akers, who looked functional with 61 yards on 14 carries. Akers, however, was stuffed on a slow developing play on a 4th-and-1 in the opening half. Darrell Henderson was barely on the field as he was given 2 carries, which went for only 9 yards. Los Angeles' top receiver was Tutu Atwell, who caught 62-yard bomb from Stafford early in the game. Otherwise, Allen Robinson was the top wide out with 4 grabs for 47 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Higbee chipped in with 4 catches for 45 yards. So we'll move on to the Ravens-Panthers. Ravens 13, Panthers 3. I mean, Carolina's defense has played well for most part of this year, and it had a great game plan against Lamar Jackson. The dynamic Baltimore quarterback, who was sick heading into this game, wasn't able to get much on the ground. He was limited to 31 rushing yards on 11 scrambles, and he also struggled to throw at times. His first trip into field goal range was ruined when he threw the ball right to the nose tackle, who snatched the ball out of the air. It wasn't just Jackson making mistakes and not being able to scramble. The receiving corps barely gave him any help, while the pass protection was an issue, as well as Ronnie Stanley suffered an injury in the third quarter. In fact, the defence bailed out the offence when it recovered a Shai Smith fumble in a 6-3 affair in the fourth quarter. Baltimore's offence finally scored at the very end with a 30-yard drive. This was the only time the Ravens scored a touchdown. While in Carolina territory, Baltimore notched 6 points otherwise in drives ending at Carolina's 43, 46, 29, 14, 42, 20, 40. And a James... Was it James Prosh drop? Yes. The first possession was ruined, by a poor Jackson throw to Mark Andrews, followed by a James Prosh drop. The second drive ended when Justice Hill stuffed on a 4th-and-3. The third was a Jackson interception. The fourth was a field goal as Baltimore ran out of time at the end of the first half. The fifth drive stopped because of a face mask penalty, a sack and a Kenyon Drake drop. The sixth ended in a field goal because of a delay of a game penalty. The seventh possession was ruined by a hold plus sack. The eighth ended in a sack. Jason finished 24 of 33 for 209 yards and an interception to go along with disappointing rushing numbers. Jackson was so frustrated in this game that he punted the ball after an unforgivable delay of the game penalty, and he was lucky he wasn't whistled for an infraction himself. Jackson doesn't have the receiving corps to dominate as he has done in the past. Rashford Bateman's injury has hurt his... Well, hurt this offence, not just his offence. So perhaps the front office will sign Odell Beckham Jr. after Thanksgiving. That'll be an interesting move to see actually where Odell ends up. Jackson just had one viable receiver, and that was DeMarcus Robinson. This was a shock, and Robinson couldn't even make the Raiders roster, but Robinson converted all 9 of his targets for 128 yards. His best completion was a great sideline catch. He and Mark Andrews, 6-63, were only Ravens with double digits receiving yardages. Devin Duvernay was a huge disappointment with only 1 catch for 3 yards. Drake was also a disappointment. Gus Edwards was ruled out, meaning Drake would have most of the workload to himself. I mean, Drake, however, had multiple negative runs, which limited him to just 46 yards on 10 carries. Drake was still the leading rusher in this game, as Deontay Foreman struggled to find anything against Baltimore's much-improved defence. Foreman was limited to 24 yards on 11 carries. Speaking of struggling Panthers, Mayfield was dreadful once again. And he is dreadful, as he went 21 of 33 for 196 yards and 2 interceptions. He lofted a couple of ugly floaters to pick towards the end of the game. He was fortunate that was basically one of the picks wasn't taken back for six, with Mayfield at the helm. The Panthers never threatened to score except for the field goal drive, which was the byproduct of a short field after Baltimore punt deep in known territory. With Mayfield playing poorly, only the Panthers accumulated more than 26 receiving yards. That was Terrace Marshall, who caught three balls for 76 yards. DJ Moore caught just three passes for 24 yards. Just take a break there and we'll be back for the Commanders Texans. Hi, and welcome to the next section of the Fourth and Inches podcast. And we have the Commanders and the Texans. So we've got the Commanders at 23, Texans 10. So this is one of the most lopsided games of the year, without a shadow of a doubt. And it certainly wasn't expected, because the Washington Commanders opened as mere 3-point favourites, with sharp action coming in on Houston. Things weren't even promising on the first drive, as Taylor Heinicke lofted one of his patented ugly floaters, as they like to call it, that was dropped by a Houston defender. On the very next drive, Washington took advantage of Houston's mistake as Davis Mills unleashed a noodle-armed throw towards the sideline that was intercepted and taken back for six. This was just part of the onslaught by halftime. The Commanders were up 20-0 as they outgained the Texans 246-5. Yes, the Texans had 5 net yards of offense, which equated to 0.2 yards per play. The Texans couldn't move the chains whatsoever, because Washington's stalwart run defence put the clamps on Demeon Pierce. The rookie was restricted to 2 yards on 6 carries by intermission. Pierce's inability to put his team into short yardage opportunities made things extremely difficult for Mills, who continued to struggle until garbage time, which is how Houston scored its 10 points. Now that I've basically gushed about the Commanders, let's discuss their major weakness, which is Heinicke. While it is true that Heinicke has been better than Carson Wentz, it's apparent that he would have thrown away a potential victory against better competition. Heinicke barely completed half of his passes, going 5 of 27 for 91 yards. He didn't commit a turnover, but he easily could have, as mentioned earlier. Heinicke was carried by both his defence and running game, with Antonio Gibson and Brian Robson combining for 129 rushing yards. Gibson led the way with 72 yards on 18 carries, while Robinson rumbled for 57 yards on 15 attempts. Gibson also caught 3 passes for 31 receiving yards. Only 2 Commanders receivers outgained Gibson: Logan Thomas 5 for 65 and Terry McLaughlin 4 and for 55. These stats were suppressed by game script. Heinicke attempted just 5 passes after half time, but it's not like Heinicke played well either. Thanks to garbage time, Mills finished 9 for 33 for 169 yards and 2 interceptions. He also scored on a scramble. However, all of this was a byproduct of garbage time. Mills was just 6 of 9 for 22 yards and a pick by intermission. Brandon Cooks was also able to use garbage time to his advantage, catching 3 balls for 70 yards. Nico Collins chipped in with 5 grabs for 48 yards. None of this happened before halftime. Pierce could not benefit from garbage time, as you might expect. He was restricted to only 8 yards on 10 carries. So we'll quickly nip over to Lions 31, Giants 18. I mean, what's going on with the Lions at the moment? The Lions outplayed the Giants from the start to finish to win their third game in a row. I mean, wow. The Detroit defence shut down Saquon Barkley and produced 3 turnovers, while the potent Lions rushing offence scored 4 touchdowns. New York is now a game further behind the Eagles in the NFC East, and the Lions gave other teams a blueprint for how to shut down the New York offense. The Lions took their opening drive down the field for a short field goal. New York responded with Daniel Jones leading a drive that featured him distributing the ball to his receivers, and then Jones finishing the drive with a short rushing touchdown. Graham Gano missed the extra point, so the Giants held a 6-3 lead. Midway through the second quarter, Aiden Hutchinson dropped into coverage and made a phenomenal leap and hand catch to pick off Jones. Hutchinson then returned the pick 17 yards to set up the offense at the Giants 18. A few plays later, Jamal Williams charged into the end zone for his 10th touchdown of the season, and the Lions took a 10-6 lead. Jared Goff then hit Amon-Ra St. Brown for a couple of completions. God, that's a tongue twister. Totaling for about 50 yards, and Williams scored again from a yard out. Detroit then took a 17-6 lead into halftime. To open the third quarter, the Lions had a kick return near midfield and their offence was hot. With a key conversion to Tom Kennedy, the Detroit's ground game started stuffing the ball down the throat of the New York before the Williams scored again from a yard out to go up 24-6. The opening ensured Giants possession. Lions rookie safety Kerby Joseph snatched his third interception of the year and returned its 38 yards to the Giants 41. The New York defence came up to force a punt, and both teams used their punters to end drives for the remainder of the third quarter. Early in the fourth quarter, Jones hit Richie James on the run for 19 yards. Jones also took off on a few runs to set up a first and goal. Matt Breida scored from a few yards out to make it 24-12 after Gano missed another extra point midway through the fourth quarter. Isaiah Hodgkin fumbled the ball after a hard hit, and Hutchison recovered from the Lions, setting them up deep in New York territory. Justin Jackson soon took off on a 27-yard run to set up a first and goal. DeAndre Swift scored from 5 yards out to clinch the win for Detroit. Goff completed 17 of 26 passes for 165 yards. Williams took 17 carries for 64 yards and 3 touchdowns. Swift ran 5 times for 20 yards and a touchdown. St. Brown notched 7 receptions for 76 yards. Jones completed 27 of 44 passes for 341 yards, a touchdown and 2 interceptions. Barkley totaled 22 yards from 15 carries. He also recorded 2 receptions for 13 yards. Wandale Robinson led the Giants in receiving with 100 yards over 9 receptions. So we'll quickly move over to the Raiders-Broncos. So Raiders 22, Broncos 16. Where do we start with this one? I mean, Denver and Las Vegas have been among the most disappointing teams in the NFL this year. I mean, what's going on? You know, I personally thought Josh McDaniel would turn that team around. Obviously, it hasn't worked out that way. And I thought, obviously, Denver at the quarterback position with Wilson would have turned out to be a good move as well. And that really hasn't worked out either. I mean, as I said, Denver and Las Vegas have been probably the two most disappointing teams in the NFL this year. And this game continued that depressing year for the Broncos. The Raiders hurt their draft position with their third win of the season, even though Denver outplayed them for the majority of the game. Conversely, the heat of the seat under Nathaniel Hackett's figures to increase because Denver was swept by a bad Las Vegas team. The Broncos scored on their opening drive. Cortland Sutton drew a pass interference from Sam Webb. Sutton beat Webb on a slant, and then Russell Wilson hit Kendall Hilton on the run for 32-yard gain to the one. Latavius Murray darted into the end zone to make it 7-0. Las Vegas moved into Denver territory, but Daniel Carson's streak of 41 straight field goals ended when he missed a 46-yarder. Denver took advantage of field position to produce a field goal drive to go up 10-0 early in the second quarter. Las Vegas cut the Denver lead when Carr connected to Davante Adams for a 31-yard touchdown just before the half. Wilson led a drive down the field, but the Raiders blocked the field goal attempt to keep the score 10-7 going into intermission. Early in the third quarter, Carlson started a new streak by drilling a 52-yard field goal. Wilson responded by dropping in a perfect pass to Sutton for 23 yards, but Max Crosby's second sack of the game forced a field goal. Denver hit that 52-yarder to take a 13-10 lead on the first play of the fourth quarter. Midway through the same quarter, Carlson tied the game with a 57-yard field goal. The Broncos quickly answered with a 48-yard field goal from Brandon McManus to give them a 16-13 lead with 3.5 minutes remaining. After trading punts, the Raiders had one more chance getting the ball back with 1 minute 43 left at their own 22-yard line. A pass to Keelan Cole got Las Vegas to midfield, and then Carr lofted in a pass to Josh Jacobs, who took off a big run of 43 yards to set up a first and goal with a half a minute remaining. The Broncos produced a goal line stand, but Carlson drilled a 25-yard field goal to send the game into overtime. In overtime, Carr threw a rope to Foster Moreau, who for 33 yards to get the Denver 35, and on the next play, Carr found Adams wide open in the end zone after Patrick Sutton blew the coverage that allowed the Raiders to walk off with the 35-yard touchdown pass. Carr finished completing 23 of 37 for 307 yards and two touchdowns. Jacobs ran for 109 yards on 24 carries and made 3 receptions for 51 yards. Adam turned 7 receptions into 151 yards and 2 touchdowns. Wilson completed 24 of 31 passes for 247 yards. Latavius Murray had 49 yards and a touchdown on 17 carries. Melvin Gorvin was benched after fumbling right before halftime. Sutton collected 80 yards over 5 receptions. So we will go straight over to Cowboys Vikings. So Cowboys 40, Vikings 3. I mean, many people thought the Vikings were the best team in the NFL, yet were confused when they saw that Minnesota was a home underdog against the Cowboys. The sportsbooks knew, I mean, they basically knew best because they were aware that the team's record or the siren song of the uninformed ESPN viewer, a careful eye would have recognised how lucky the Vikings were this season. Minnesota's luck finally ran out, and it happened immediately when Kirk Cousins was strip-sacked by Michael Parsons on his first drop-back. This was a common theme throughout the day, as Cousins took 7 sacks despite being pulled early in the fourth quarter. Meanwhile, the Vikings got no pressure on Dak Prescott. He wasn't sacked on a single occasion, as the Dallas offense was flawless against an overrated Minnesota defense. The end result was the Cowboys outgaining the Vikings 458 for 183. Cousins barely completed half of his passes, going 12 of 23 for 105 yards. Cousins is the worst quarterback in the NFL when dealing with pressure, as he completed 42% of his passes while under duress heading into this game. This will continue to be a theme for the Vikings whenever they battle a defence with an elite pass rush. Cousins was so inept that he couldn't get any positive garbage time fantasy stats for his receiving corps. This was true for Justin Jefferson, who caught only 3 passes for 33 yards, and yet Jefferson, who has 2 yards, well, was 2 yards away from leading the team in receiving. That distinction was held by T.J. Hockenson, who hauled in 5 of his 9 targets for 34 yards. Adam Thielen, 2-25, was a non-factor. Dalvin Cook had a decent game, considering the conditions. He dashed for 72 yards on 11 carries. That's correct, yeah. Cooks would likely have enjoyed a monstrous afternoon against a leaky Dallas defence if his team was able to be more competitive. While Cook couldn't quite get there, but Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott posted huge fantasy numbers. Elliott started, but he and Pollard both had 15 carries. With Pollard predictably outgaining Elliott 80-42, Elliott scored 2 rushing touchdowns, but Pollard found the end zone twice as a receiver. He caught 6 passes for 109 receiving yards and a couple of scores. Aside from Pollard, C.D. Lamb topped the Cowboys in receiving with 5 grabs for 45 yards. He made a great sideline catch right before halftime to set up a 60-yard field goal. Dalton Schultz, 3-22, nearly scored a touchdown in the second half. So we'll just finish up there, and when we come back, we'll go for my beloved Steelers against the Bengals. Ah! Hi, and welcome back to the next section of the Fourth and Inches podcast. And yes, we're going to talk about my beloved Steelers against the Bengals. Bengals 37, Steelers 30. I mean, my Pittsburgh's defense improved greatly last week with T.J. Watt returning from injury, but it wasn't much of a factor in this game. He made great interception on what was one of the best plays I've seen from a defensive linesman, as one of the CBS announcers put it. However, he didn't get much pressure on Joe Burrow, as Lyle Collins did a good job of keeping him out of the backfield. With Burrow's having more time in the pocket than expected, the third-year pros sliced and diced my Pittsburgh's beleaguered secondary. I mean, Burrow finished 24 of 39 for 355 yards, 4 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. With the second pick being tipped, Burrow was terrific. In its offensive line, that must be praised the most. Burrow's pass protection had struggled all year. But if you think about it, the bye week really allowed the blocking unit to really gel together, probably watch loads of tape and, you know, really just put things together. And if so, it will be extremely difficult to beat Cincinnati down the stretch once again. What's scary for Cincinnati's opponents is that Burrow thrived like he did without the services of Ja'Marr Chase. With Chase out, T. Higgins led the team in receiving with 9 catches for 148 yards. Higgins fantasy owners were frustrated, however, to see Samji Perine Vulture 3 receiving touchdowns. Perine caught 4 balls for 52 yards and the trio of scores. Conversely, Tyler Boyd was very inefficient, I mean, he was terrible, converting just 2 of his 7 targets for 42 yards. Boyd didn't even log a single catch until late in the game. Higgins and Boyd's fantasy owners weren't the only ones who were tittling. Joe Mixon's owners watched Perine score thrice as Mixon left the game early with a concussion. Mixon was limited to just 20 yards on 7 carries as a result. While Mixon disappointed, Najee Harris had his best game of the season despite the return of the Bengals' nose tackle DJ Reader. Harris gained 90 yards and 2 touchdowns on 20 carries. Harris had to basically both carry the offense as Kenny Pickett had a very uneven performance. I mean, he had some nice throws, especially in the first half when he went 14 of 19 for 141 yards and a touchdown. However, Pickett struggled as the afternoon progressed. He was just 11 of 23 for 124 yards following intermission. Cincinnati's coaching staff made some really great adjustments during the break. That said, Pickett missed several open receivers, including George Pickens, for a pair of deep potential games, as well as a ball targeted for Pat Freiermuth in the red zone. Pickens' final numbers, for those who don't want to do the sort of complex maths thing, I mean, I get this from Pro Football Focus as well, so you're not alone, were 25 of 42 for 265 yards and a touchdown. He really struggled in the second half, but it wasn't all his fault as his leaky offence line didn't give him much of a chance. Considering that Pickens missed Pickett for 2 big gains, the rookie receiver could have enjoyed a huge game. He still did quite well, catching 4 passes for 83 yards and a score. And he also drew an interference flag. He barely edged out Freiermuth, who caught 8 of his 12 targets for 79 yards. Deontay Johnson was a big disappointment with 4 receptions for 21 yards. Thank God I don't even have to talk about that game anymore. This was a great game, and the Chiefs are looking really strong. So we've got Chiefs Chargers, Chiefs 30, Chargers 27. If the Chargers couldn't defeat the Chiefs under these conditions, they'll never be able to do so in the late season meeting. The Chiefs already down Juju Smith-Schuster and Mecole Hardman, lost Kadarius Toney to a hamstring injury in the opening half. The remaining receivers spent time dropping passes in the early stages of the game. The Chiefs were even held to a pair of consecutive 3 and outs, which is extremely uncommon for, you know, the team. The Chargers' offense, meanwhile, was humming with primary receivers returning from injury. Granted, Mike Williams aggravated an injury after making a great sideline catch, but Joshua Palmer had a dominating performance to make up for that. He and Keenan Allen gave Justin Herbert 2 dynamic threats as they attacked the Chiefs' secondary and maintained a lead for most of the opening half. The Chiefs, however, made some nice adjustments at halftime, and the Chargers couldn't get anything going for a while in the second half. The Chiefs eventually took a 23-20 lead as Patrick Mahomes converted a 3rd and 17 with a dart to Justin Watson, eventually finding Travis Kelce in the end zone to go up 23-20. The Chiefs had a chance to expand the lead, but Jerick McKinnon lost a fumble. Allen, who fumbled earlier, made amends in his error, and with an amazing drive catch up 46 yards, Herbert took advantage of the blunder, finding Palmer for a touchdown to go 27-23. There was 1 minute 46 remaining in regulation, which was more than enough time for Mahomes as he connected on deep throws to Marquise Valdes-Scantling and Sky Moore following Mahomes' scramble. The Chiefs quarterback connected with Kelce on a crossing route for the decisive score. Mahomes, despite missing 3 of his top 4 wide receivers, went 20 of 34 for 329 yards and 3 touchdowns. He also scrambled on 4 occasions for 23 rushing yards. Mahomes saw lots of pressure early on disruptive drives, but dominated in the second half. He misfired just thrice following intermission. All three of Mahomes' touchdowns went to Kelce, who snared six of his 10 targets for 115 yards and a trio of scores. Watson, 3-67, and Moore, 5-63, were next on the stat sheet. Isaiah Pacheco thrived as the team's primary ball carrier, gaining 107 yards on 15 carries versus the Chargers' leaky run defence. As the Chargers, it was another wasted brilliant effort for Herbert, who went 23-30 for 288. Wait there, I just need to check my stat sheet here just on the side. Yeah, so basically he went for 23-30 for 280 yards, two touchdowns and an interception, which occurred on the final real play from scrimmage in desperation time. Herbert played an amazing game, especially considering that both of his top receivers were either out or limited. Williams caught only one pass for 115 yards. I don't know what's going on with me today. I think the medication's kicking in. Williams caught only one pass for 15 yards, not 115 yards. Jesus. While Allen hauled in five balls for 94 yards. Palmer led the Chargers with eight catches for 106 yards and two scores. Austin Eckler had a surprisingly quiet game as a receiver with two catches for 117 yards, but did well as a rusher. He gained 83 yards and a touchdown on the ground on 19 carries. Getting through these notes in my Pro Football Focus stats, just some of the medication that I'm taking at the moment. I have to take 2 milligrams of diazepam, 3 sets 4 times a day, so they do make you feel quite drowsy and quite it's just basically what it does is I take thiamine as well and a campontosi, and it's basically stops all the cravings and stops you having seizures when having no alcohol in your blood for so many years, you know, since I've been 15-year-old. So yeah, once I'm reading my notes and taking some information in from other sites like Pro Football Focus, CBS, Sky News, I use loads of sources to get my information to put together, as well as obviously watching tape and NFL Game Pass games in 40. So yeah, sorry if I've slurred my words on any parts. I am trying my best. We shall move on to, I think this would be the final game that I need to cover, and then I'll quickly fire on and do the next segment as my predictions for, which is Sunday now, games, and get that out as quick as possible. So persevere with me, I will get there. So basically we've got 49ers, Cardinals. So 49ers 38, Cardinals 10. Though the Cardinals generated a couple of scoring drives in the opening half, they had no chance to be competitive with the 49ers. They were missing four offensive linesmen, including DJ Humphreys, so they had severe problems blocking San Francisco's elite pass rush. Conversely, San Francisco had great success attacking the middle of the Cardinals' defence with that sort of plethora of weapons. The end result was a lopsided affair in which the starters sat for most of the fourth quarter. Jimmy Garoppolo was nearly flawless in this game, going 20 of 29 for 228 yards and 4 touchdowns. He was on pace for 300 yards night by halftime, but he couldn't get there because Brock Purdy replaced him for most of the fourth quarter. Garoppolo threw a pair of touchdowns to two players, Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle. The latter led the 49ers in receiving with 4 catches for 84 yards and 2 scores. Ayuk was less productive. In fact, in his 2 touchdowns were his... Yeah, they were his only receptions of the evening as they went for 20 yards. Deebo Samuel also scored, but via a rush. He had 39 yards touchdown on an end around, and he also caught 7 of his 9 targets for 57 receiving yards. Let me just double check that, just in Pro Football Focus. Yeah, so he caught 7 of his 9 targets for 57 receiving yards. Christian McCaffrey also had a big night, though mostly as a receiver out of the backfield. He actually had fewer rushing yards than Elijah Mitchell. 9-59, dashing for only 39 yards on 7 carries, but he hauled in all 7 of his targets for 67 receiving yards. The Cardinals. The Cardinals, meanwhile, were expected to have three high-volume offensive players despite the blocking issues, but they were quickly reduced to two because Rondale Moore suffered that early injury. Moore was a major target for Colt McCoy last week, though Greg Dorch was able to replace him mostly well. Dorch caught 9 passes for 103 yards, including a 47-yard gain that set up the only touchdown of the night for Arizona. However, he ran a wrong route on a key fourth down in the third quarter, which had McCoy grasping his helmet in frustration. As for the other two high-volume players, DeAndre Hopkins was the second leading receiver in the game with 9 grabs for 91 yards. James Conner didn't get as much yardage, minus 14 carries, 42 yards, but he scored Arizona's only touchdown. McCoy finished 24 of 34 for 218 yards. And an interception, which was a pass that bounced off Connor's hands. This occurred early in the evening with the turnover setting up Kittle's first touchdown. McCoy had no chance behind his injury-ravaged offensive line. So that's that for this week. Obviously, I'm quite late. It's just been a crazy week due to... my rehabilitation process, obviously just taking some sort of new meds and trying out other meds for sort of depression and stuff. So just want to be open and honest and let everyone know exactly what's going on, but I'm just doing my best to keep myself going, keep the Fourth and Inches podcast going. I'll be back with Five Star in January. Neil's been holding the fort. There'll be some changes happening for the goods. So yeah, lots of exciting times to come. So next we'll get this out and we'll get on to tonight's score predictions. I did have the Colts going 20-19 against my Steelers, but I think I'm going to change my mind on that one. You shall hear on the next pod that I'm about to release. Have a great weekend, guys.